It's time for the Daily Connection. It's 4.5 minutes after 10 o'clock on a Thursday, the final Thursday in the month of May. And you know, when the final Thursdays of a given month roll around, it means it's time.
It's time.
It is time.
My church history aficionados and pals, Matt and Chris, back once again to talk about a person that we ought to know about.
Indeed.
In our church and our family, a spiritual family. And so, indeed, they're back again today, Matt and Chris, both on the staff at Trail Christian Fellowship, and is someone that I know very little about.
You know, you say that almost every time we do this show. Have you ever known how little Pat knows?
Is that right? I'm sorry.
You go, I don't know anything about him.
Well, neither do we until 48 hours before the show.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, I don't feel so dumb.
You don't need to feel so bad,
Pat. What you've done is the research, whereas I haven't. Right. So.
There you go. Yeah, we're going to be talking about Amy Carmichael. And Amy Carmichael was known to her friends as Wild Irish. And that ought to interest you, Pat, Irish woman. And Amy Carmichael was a prolific writer and author, published author, a missionary to the children of India, and actually a founder of a Protestant religious order for women. Born in 1867, a couple years after the end of the Civil War in the United States of America, oldest of seven kids, big families out there in Ireland, and she was the daughter of very devoutly Christian parents. Her father was a mill owner, mm-hmm. and really kind of encouraged and encouraged the development in Amy of a real tough tomboy spirit, and he really wanted her to never give in to difficulty or physical strain, and that probably served her well, because she was one of those people that lived her entire life really in chronic pain and suffered actually from a debilitating disease most of her life, and yet pressed ahead and had quite a ministry in her life.
Well, she was interesting. She was a tough old cob, boy. Later we'll laugh, because even when she was hurt and bedridden, she would whine and yell at the people nursing her and you know, hey, go get me a pillow or something like that. And boy, she was very strict as she ran the ministries and all. But through all of that, in spite of that crusty exterior, boy, oh boy, did she saved a lot of people. And that's what we're going to be looking at. You know, her father, as Christopher said, really encouraged her not only in her learning and physical training and kind of a stoic toughness. She really became quite a tomboy. She used to organize her brothers and sisters and have bizarre adventures that we don't even have time to go into, but they are fun. But long about as she entered young adulthood, say 15, 16 years old, her father died, and that made a huge hole in her life, and her mom kind of kept moving around looking for places where they could live and make a living.
Now, where was she growing up again?
This is in Ireland.
Ireland, okay.
And
they moved to Belfast.
I think they had some money left from the mill and everything, so they weren't poor, but it was still a tough existence. And she was confronted in moving to the cities with the poverty that was there, and that great story about she and her brothers were coming home from church, and they saw this old woman who was just, the wind was blowing, it was icy, and they could see she's dressed in rags, she's really in bad shape, and they, being young kids, they were too embarrassed to go help her. They wanted to help her, they wanted to take her maybe some money or a cloak, but you know how kids are, oh, it's not cool, so they just didn't do anything, and she's feeling worse and worse about it, and she finally turns around, and the woman is gone. And she cites that later as wondering, my gosh, was that angel unawares? Because it was from that point forward where she really began to develop a lot of sensitivity to the developing ministries that ministered to the poor in her city. Took care of young women that were down and out. I think she contributed to the orphanages, mm-hmm. had a house, a shelter, halfway house kind of thing. So even as a young girl, she was extremely, extremely active in ministry. Gosh, I think, didn't Hudson Taylor come to talk in Belfast?
That's right. Hudson Taylor, really, aside from her parents, Amy had a couple major influences in her real formative years, those late teens to the early 20s. One of them was, of course, going to hear the famous missionary Hudson Taylor of the China Inland Mission, who we've talked about in another broadcast, and also then Robert Wilson from the Keswick movement of England. I don't know if you've heard of the Keswick movement. It was a big thing, you know, around the last quarter of the 19th century, there were quite a few different independent movements going on in Europe and the United States. D.L. Moody was part of it. Spurgeon was part of it. The Keswick movement was also another one where they were basically Bible conferences. It was a time of getting away for a week and having a week of intensive Bible study and challenge to a devout and holy life. And these were big things. You know, they're kind of mainstream now, you know, and as a matter of fact, we hardly even do them anymore. But at this time, these were brand new things and were really very powerful instruments in God's hands as he worked with God's people. And these two influences, of course, had a very profound influence on her.
Wasn't it the Keswick conference in England that she went to? That's
yes,
where she actually
that's
felt
where it
God call her to the mission.
And she found, yeah, she actually received a calling from the Lord to go into missions at a Keswick conference, and she goes and applies naturally to go to the China Inland Mission, which would be a natural thing because she was very impressed with Hudson Taylor. And she ends up totally washing out of that after about 3 weeks. She didn't have really much of an aptitude for the language, and she had poor health. And they just said, you'll never do, and it'll never work in China.
But she didn't give up, by God.
Boy, she didn't, you know. And a couple years later, she ends up going to Japan with a mission related to the Keswick movement. And so, you know, if Hudson Taylor didn't come through, the Keswick movement comes through, and she goes to Japan, and that is an absolute disaster in her life. She gets there, and she
cannot learn the
Japanese language at all, has a really difficult time with the climate, and eventually the climate gets the better of her with her. She had a chronic nerve disease, which was exacerbated by the hot and the cold of China, of Japan. And so she ends up having to leave. And she goes, ironically, to the China Inland Mission. They had a clinic there, and she goes there for a while to receive healing and treatment, and then goes to Ceylon, and then eventually goes back to England without really a mission. She goes back there.
One discouraged young puppy.
My gosh, she feels
like she's answered God's call and has just had the door slammed in her face two or three times here. With her health broken, she hardly knows what to do. So there she sits.
So she goes back to England, but within a year, she writes a book. She really writes her first published book at that time. And then within a year, she receives a call to go to India.
Now, what year would that have been? Just give us a...
1895?
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking in 18...
Right, yeah, right around...
She's in her
here.
Late 20s.
Okay.
This is roughly around that this goes on. And, you know, she ends up, at the end of that year, getting this call to go to India. And before she even leaves for India, she masters the Tamil language that she's going to be speaking there. And things really fall into place for her. And she ends up going to India and never comes back the remainder of her life, which was another 60 years.
Wow.
You know, and I think it's just a lesson for us, you know, that, you know, sometimes we can hear the call of God in our lives and we can step out in obedience, and it may not work out right away, but that doesn't mean that was a bad move for us.
The call is still there.
That the call is still there. It's that the Lord is moving us and guiding us inexorably towards a ministry that's going to be a real fit for our lives.
And pruning and shaping us. That's the part we
need. That's the part we dislike, and yet that's what God's doing and what God did in Amy Carmichael's life.
Well, here she is. She's in southern India with the Church of England's Zenana Missionary Society. And she doesn't even really have an agenda. She's just kind of there visiting and checking it out and seeing what's going on. And some of the sisters of the Mission Society, they're walking around the towns there in southern India. And she sees what's going on with the in the Hindu temples, the child prostitution, which mostly girls but also boys, where the priests kind of farm the children out for sexual activity, and they get paid for that, or they take in the money for that, or people donate because of that. And
definitely a different kind of stewardship campaign that we're used to.
Definitely. Yeah. So this, she's wiped out. I mean, this stamped her brutally. We haven't even discovered the stories of what scarred her. She must have horrible things. I mean, we're talking 7, 8, 9 year olds let's not even go there. It's as bad as you can imagine it could be. Well, this just galvanizes her. She immediately begins looking around for an opportunity to snatch the kids away, to hide them, to give them refuge. And over the next 5 years, actually, although she didn't grab huge numbers, she's making contacts, and she's actually establishing a house. Tamil Nadu in southern India, where she can actually house some of these little refugees. And first she takes in a woman, then she takes in a boy, then she takes in a girl, and then she finally takes the first temple children, and that's how they were designated. And this just starts the ball rolling. I mean, before long, she's got hundreds of these kids. And they're not just orphans in an orphanage. They actually become members of a spiritual family. It's the fellowship that she founds. What was
it? It was called the Donover Fellowship. Of course, not to be confused with the English pop star Donovan.
Hail Atlantis.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. Sorry, I'm better now.
You slipped up.
Well, here she is, and she's got this family. It's hundreds of kids, hundreds of kids. And as a matter of fact, in one particularly grisly episode, I think the parents of one 8-year-old were going to give this little girl into prostitution at the temple, and Amy snagged her and drug her off and hit her. And the police and the parents showed up and said, you're going to prison if you don't give her back. And Amy just said, well, okay, have at it, bring it, and refused to divulge the location of the child. And by some bizarre coincidence, in a couple months, somebody sent down a note that said all the charges have been dropped. It's just coincidence, though, don't you
think? I'm sure. It could possibly be anything
the
else.
The intervention of God. No, yeah. No. But this characterized her ministry work primarily. She did a million different things. It really a Mother Teresa of the 19th century back then.
One of the things she did also was, she recruited a lot of Indian women to help with the children. And they formed a religious order called the Sisters of the Common Life. And it was not like the Catholics, where there was a binding together from a vow, but it was a binding together, really, of a mutual desire to rescue and save these kids.
Well, it became a family.
Really. And it really did become a family. And I think that's the difference, rather than an institutional orphanage. These people were actually given a new last name, and you were a life member, just like you were a life member of a family. You're a life member whether you were grown up or not. And a lot of the kids actually came back and became servants within this ministry.
Because not only were they being cared for physically, but as is very characteristic of most missionaries, we forget that because missionaries take such a hard knock from Hollywood, and the schools portray them as exploiting the native people, indigenous people. And, that doesn't jive with reality. Usually, the missionaries not only went into an area and were very calm and collected and mellow and gentle, they usually pioneered written language for the people. They usually pioneered hospitals and schools. They oftentimes, they were the ones that educated the children, the indigenous children, to really enter into the modern times and enabled the children to be schooled enough so they could deal with foreign governments and things like that. They prevented more exploitation. Oh, it's unbelievable. As a matter of like New Missions in Haiti today, down there, Christopher and I have both gone down there a couple times. And in that whole area down in Haiti, that's the one place where everybody's well fed. It's within 20 miles of the mission. And the children are being educated there, and they are now moving into government and business. And it's because of the mission effort that these people are being empowered to take charge of their lives and serving in God. Really enjoy some serious...
We forget how the Christian message, really does cause the tide to rise and the boats to lift.
There is Amen.
Anytime there's been Christian mission activity in any culture around the world, there has always been a moral uplift, usually an economic. We talk about exporting our values. Well, a lot of times the values that have been exported through mission work have elevated a society from, Hawaii is a perfect example. I love the way James Michener slaughtered the real truth about the 1820 missionary crew that went out from New England out there, when in fact, those people found people living in Stone Age conditions, living in starvation, and the natives of Hawaii were quite grateful for the work that the missionaries did there. And so these are just stories, one after another, and of course Amy Carmichael's story.
Where Amy stops the temple prostitution,
really?
Basically, just as William Carey stopped the burning of the widows, Patrick stopped the human sacrifice, cannibalism. Basically, missionaries go in, life gets a whole lot better, regardless of what Hollywood tells you. And boy, Amy was no exception to that rule. Things went up significantly. Well, here she is, relatively successful as a missionary person. Perhaps 1,000 kids have been rescued from the temples. And at age 64, she takes a terrible fall. and just she's crippled from that and just is wiped out in pain all the time and needs a constant cycle of nurses to care for her in the Southern India compound there with the Donover Fellowship. And lo and behold, she begins to write. And she cranks out, was it 35?
35 books. About half of her books, and that's another thing we'd like to focus on, of course, is the fact that a lot of people only know Amy Carmichael as the writer. You could go down to the Christian bookstore and find a lot of her work still in print. They're very popular devotional books. And Amy wrote a lot of those from her bed. And wrote them in excruciating pain. A lot of them were dictated, and then she would have some of the sisters come and type and put them together, and then she'd edit them and re-edit them. But that's something a lot of people don't realize, is that almost half of the books were written from her sickbed in the last 20 years of her life. If you can imagine spending 20 years basically bedridden, it's kind of an interesting thing.
If the Lord had not allowed her to be injured, it's very likely we wouldn't have any of these books.
That's right.
She might have wrote one or something.
What are the books about?
Well, they're devotionals. They're stories. It's quite an eclectic line. Some of the titles that stick out. I was just reading this last weekend: Rose from Briar, Gold by Moonlight, Figures of the True. I mean, the list goes on. She felt very comfortable in the several different genres. And, gosh, I think I've seen some of these down at Evangel.
Oh, yeah. They're all over the place. There's another one, if you ever want to read it, that is real short and pithy. But, you know, if you ever want a dose of super conviction in your life, she wrote this book called If. It's just called If. And it's all these maxims and sayings about the Christian life and ministry that came from her heart. And I'll tell you what, you know, just about each and every one of them is a nice little arrow right into your heart about, oh my gosh.
She was no sissy.
Definitely not.
You know, I'm not sure. She probably wouldn't have liked us. Or she probably would have loved us, but not liked us. She would have thought, as a matter of fact, she felt that Americans, she wouldn't even let them apply for the mission. She must have been traumatized. The Americans that she had met previously, she thought were just way too spoiled, had not nearly enough staying power for the difficulty involved. Now, just for fun, didn't Hudson Taylor also kind of adopt this thing, not so much in Americans, but didn't he give his recruits a tough time?
Oh, he would actually purposefully discourage, and you know, and you had to live at the CIM compound for a year in London, and he would spend the year whatever he could do to demoralize you, you know, because he just didn't want you to go out in the mission field and be a sissy. But I think it's ironic, too, that, you know, Amy Carmichael has always been a very popular writer in America, and yet she basically had a real prejudice against Americans. It's kind of a funny thing as well.
It's an English thing.
Yeah, and she was also really upset when she read a book review about one of her books in which the editor who wrote this book review, you know, talked about her popular writings and how her writings were popular.
Oh, she hit the ceiling.
And she hit the ceiling about that, you know, because these were, you know, war manuals. These were books written in the heat of battle.
Popular writing?
And she said, you know, I just hope all these burn to ashes, if that's all they are, is, you know, is a bunch of popular.
She was a tough old
thing.
Cop.
But she had, you know, her writings were popular because of the fact that they were practical, and they were in the trenches kind of work, but they were also very searching. And we'll share a couple quotes.
Well, I've got a good one here. This is one that really struck me. All the great temptations appear first in the region of the mind and can be fought and conquered there. We have been given the power to close the door of the mind. We can lose this power through disuse or increase it by use, by the daily discipline of the inner man in things which seem small, and by reliance upon the word of the Spirit of truth. It is God that works in you and to do his good pleasure. It is as though he said, learn to live in your will, not in your feelings. I mean, I wish I could write like that.
I wish I could actually live like that. You know, there's another one, too, that comes out of the If book that I thought was, it always hit me right between the eyes. But it was, if I cannot, in honest happiness, take the second place, or the 20th, if I cannot take the first without making a fuss about my unworthiness, then I know nothing of Calvary love. I mean, that book is just filled with stuff like that.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I know it is. It, you know, that's what I mean. There's a lot of depth to her writing that's very good. So kind of an interesting thing. You know, you have somebody who is an administrator of a huge mission, is in the trenches of this mission, running this mission, and yet has the time to also write in this way. It's kind of an interesting combination, because a lot of people that are really gifted in leadership and all that are not real gifted in devotional and spiritual living, and yet she was kind of an interesting marriage of both. She
well,
had
I
a,
even wonder if the Lord sort of took her out of the main active running, because she was pretty cranky. She was pretty
yeah, that's true.
Well, the Lord, it's like Martin Luther. The Lord outfitted her very well to deal with nasty Hindu priests that want their children back to serve in the prostitution rings and angry Indian officials. He outfitted her temperamentally. He equipped her very well to deal in that way. And I'm wondering, did he take her out of that, put her in bed so she could write these good devotionals, and put somebody a little softer with more people skills maybe in the chief navigation seat of the orphanage there? It's interesting how the Lord moves us around according to our gifts.
With the hard life that she was having, and then moving into the creative arts, kind of that.
Absolutely.
I think that's great. It's got to be a God thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Amy Carmichael died at age 80, just shy of 84, in 1951, which means, of course, she's been gone about 54 years. And people that knew her are still around. You know, some of the children she rescued and everything are still around.
Don't we
in
have
life.
A connection there?
And Matthew and I have a mutual friend, a missionary named Juliana Kelsall. And a good friend of ours, known her for years, goes to Trail. And she did some of her initial work in India. And one of the people that helped her was one of the children that was rescued by Amy Carmichael, Chella, and
really?
Her name was Chella, I believe, and she was telling us that this lady said that Amy Carmichael was very, very strict person, and yet, you know, was one of those people that truly loved the Lord. And the other thing she said was she always had a song about everything. If it was hot, she would have a song about how it wasn't going to complain about the weather or anything like that, but just one of those people that was always, you know, singing and had a song in her heart.
And she wasn't a crab apple either. I mean, she took the kids out on field trips, and she's trooping around with a couple hundred kids, takes them out to the beach, takes them to the jungle, has a good time, scares the daylights out of them with nighttime stories.
Yeah. So it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, hard to define this girl.
The ministry is still around today, by the way. It's located at the southern tip of India, and is completely run by Indian nationals, and they have a 400-acre compound there, and temple prostitution shortly after World War II, the end of World War II. But the ministry continued to focus on children, and they basically have spent their time rescuing and caring for abandoned and neglected and abused children there. So the ministry is alive and well and following many of the same traditions that Amy started so many years ago.
So Amy lived in India the rest of her life.
Absolutely. Left there 60 years and lived there 60 years and never came back.
As a matter of fact, if you go to India or Sri Lanka or any of those places and you run into somebody whose last name is Karuniya, that is Tamil for loving kindness. And that's somebody that belongs to Amy's family.
Yeah, they had everybody take that as their last name, as your last name was loving kindness.
Wow. What was it again?
Karuniya.
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 Okay.
No, Karuniya, I think, is a kind of a taco at
Carne
Mexican
asada,
restaurants.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
You know,
missed that.
Anyway.
Important distinction. Okay,
sure.
Guys. Well,
if you want to read more about Amy Carmichael, they never really made any movies about her, to my knowledge, but a couple of great books, Chance to Die by Elizabeth Elliot. If you remember Elizabeth Elliot, prolific author in her own right, similar life story, wife of a missionary in own right, and a writer, and had a fabulous career. Anyway, that's a great book. And then also Ruth A. Tucker has a book called Guardians of the Great Commission, which is articles and shorter stories about all sorts of women missionaries. Phenomenal book. Recommend that as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you, lads. Yes, I appreciate that, and she was from Ireland, so that warms my heart. Okay, well, Matt McAuliffe and Chris White here today to talk about Amy Carmichael, and we'll be back next month, and I believe it's Galileo. That's going to be a great program,
too.
Oh,
that'll be fun.
All right, thanks, laddies. Hey, stay tuned, because we have In Touch with Charles Stanley coming up next here on KDOV.